One of the biggest differences between the world of Jesus' day and the world of our day is the communication technology that we have. In our world, in our day, we have almost instantaneous communication. If you have a photograph you want people to see or a video you want them to watch, you can put them up on the web, and theoretically, anybody, any place in the world will be able to see what you want them to see. If you've got an opinion you'd like to share with the rest of the world, you can put it on a weblog, and other people can log in and read your opinion and leave theirs. And if you've got a fact you want to put in front of the world, you can spam it to a million email boxes and maybe half a dozen folks will actually read it. But we live in an age of instantaneous communication, and how totally different it was in Jesus' day, where they didn't even have daily newspapers, where they didn't even have printing presses, where word traveled from mouth to mouth, so that the women who went to the tomb on Easter Sunday went and told their friends about their experience at the tomb, and then their friends went and told their friends about what they had heard. And in short order, lots of people had heard, but because of the vagaries of human communication, if I've got something in my mind and I say it inexpertly, and then you hear it and you hear something different than what I said, and then you go and tell somebody else, and it changes again, and when it gets heard, it changes again. And so in the telling of that story, it's amazing how much variety and diversity crept into the ways that the story was told. So that by the time we get the Gospels written, the earliest Gospel being written about 40 years after the resurrection, you have some incredible variety. For instance, if you look at the four gospel stories and just ask the question of who came to the tomb on Easter morning, you get four very different answers. Mark says that three women went to the tomb, Mary Magdalene and another Mary, the mother of James, and Salome. And in the Gospel of Matthew, written 20 years after Mark, it says that two women went to the tomb, Mary Magdalene and another Mary, and there were a bunch of Roman guards there as well. But if you look in the Gospel of Luke, also written 20 years after Mark, it says that there were three women who they named, Mary Magdalene and Mary and Joanna, as well as all the women who traveled through Galilee with Jesus. But if you look in the Gospel of John, written even afterwards, it names one woman and two men who went to the tomb, Mary Magdalene and Peter, and the disciple whom Jesus loved. And if you look to the Gospels to ask what happened when they went to the tomb on Easter Sunday, the oral tradition shows also a lot of development and variety. In Mark's version of the story, which is the earliest one, we have the really dramatic and powerful account of the women going to the tomb to anoint Jesus' body, because they had had to bury him in such a hurry because it was the Sabbath. And they brought spices to the tomb and they were asking among themselves, how are we going to roll away the stone so that we can get in and anoint his body? But when they got there, the stone had been rolled away, so they went into the tomb and it was empty. But there was a young man standing there who told them, why do you look for the living among the dead? He isn't here. He's risen as he said. Go and tell the disciples that he's gone ahead of you to Galilee. There you will see him again. But Mark ends his gospel by saying they ran from the tomb and they said nothing to anyone, for they were afraid. It ends on a note of silence. But in Matthew's story, it happens somewhat differently. They go into the tomb. There's not a man there, but there's an angel, as we heard. And the angel tells them that Jesus is risen, and he directs the disciples to go to the top of a mountain. And the disciples go to the mountain, and there on top of the mountain, the risen Christ encounters the disciples and gives them the Great Commission. In the Gospel of Luke, there's not one angel, but two angels. And Christ appears not to all the disciples on top of the mountain, but to the two disciples on the Emmaus Road later that night. And in the Gospel of John, the risen Christ appears to Mary there in the garden, but Mary doesn't recognize him, thinks that he's the gardener. And then later that evening, he appears to the 12 disciples as they gathered behind locked doors in the upper room. So we have all of this incredible diversity in the ways that the story is told. And I wonder, what if we had had modern communication technology in the first century? What if one of the women going to the tomb had carried her digital camera with her and snapped a picture of whatever it was she saw? And what if Pontius Pilate, instead of posting guards at the tomb, had instead put up a video surveillance camera so that today we'd have the videotape to watch and there'd be no dispute about exactly what it was that happened on Easter morning? Would that make any difference? What would those modern devices have shown? And would it make a difference as to how the word got out and how many people believed it and what it is that we believe? One of my favorite movies, and I've told you about this movie a number of months ago, is a movie based on a science fiction novel by Carl Sagan. The movie is called Contact. Have any of you seen that movie? In that movie, which stars Jodie Foster, Jodie plays the role of a brilliant young astrophysicist named Ellie McPherson. And her work is to be engaged in the search for signs of extraterrestrial intelligence. And to do that, she aims radio telescopes at different points in the heavens and just records whatever the radio signals coming in from that quadrant of space might be. And she is searching for a signal that is something other than just random noise. And one night, against all odds, she comes across such a signal being broadcast from the constellation Vega. And they record the sound and they decipher it, and it turns out to have an encoded set of schematics for building some sort of incredible machine. And nobody's quite sure what that machine might be for, but the hunch is that it's a machine that will transport a human being to meet the people who sent the signal. So the nations of the world pool their resources and they build this machine. And to make a long story much shorter, Jodie Foster ends up being the one who goes on this mission. And you see her on the day of the mission entering the capsule, which is a round metal windowless capsule. And she sits in the chair in the middle of the capsule, and technicians come and they fasten a recording device around her forehead to record the sights and the sounds that she encounters on her journey. And then they seal the capsule door and they start the countdown. And as it reaches zero, they turn on the power and it begins shaking, and then the capsule is released. And we see the journey that Jodie Foster as Ellie McPherson goes on. She experiences herself traveling through space, going through a wormhole, seeing the amazing sights of the vastness of space, the incredible beauty of the stars and the nebula, until she lands far, far away from Earth on a place that is beautiful, and she encounters one of the people who sent this message. She encounters this alien intelligence in a form that she can understand, and they have a conversation. And then she goes back home, traveling again through space, and at the end of her journey, she splashes in the ocean. And that's the experience that she had. But watching from the outside, the scientists and technicians who were in charge of this mission saw nothing like that. As the countdown reached zero and the capsule was released, all they saw happen was they saw it fall into the ocean below. a drop of about 15 seconds. And they had video cameras trained on that capsule from every angle. And from every angle, you saw exactly the same thing. You just released the capsule and it fell into the ocean. And so there was a great conflict after this mission. Jodie Foster insisted that she had traveled through space and encountered this foreign intelligence. And the scientific community said there are no data to back up your observations. We didn't see anything like that. It just fell into the ocean. And even that video recorder you wore around your forehead didn't record anything. There was just static. And so they conducted an investigation. And at the end of the movie, you have this really interesting conversation between two presidential advisors. One is a woman who is a counselor to the president, and the other is a man who is the national security advisor. And the woman says to the man, "I assume you read the confidential findings report that came out of the investigating committee." And he says, "I flipped through it." And she says, "I was especially interested in the section on the video unit, the one that just recorded static." And he said, "Continue." And she said, "It wasn't the fact that recorded the static that interested me." And he said, "Continue." And she said, "It was the fact that it recorded over 18 hours of static." And he said, "That's very interesting, isn't it? But it seems to me that when we consider Easter and we consider the static that we have in all the different gospel accounts, this is what we're talking about. I am convinced that if you had trained a video camera on the empty tomb, it wouldn't settle any debates, because what happened on Easter morning is not something that can be scientifically observed or weighed or measured or analyzed. What happened on Easter morning was something that happened in the hearts and in the minds and in the very beings of those women who went to the tomb. They went to that tomb and they had an experience of the holy. Even though they had lost their dearest friend, they experienced him as being alive and among them and with them and in them. And they went to tell their friends, the disciples, who first could not believe it, but they too had those experiences of the holy, the experience that Christ wasn't dead but alive within them and among them. And it's a fact of history that this poor, unsophisticated, uneducated, powerless, demoralized, discouraged group of people who should have just disappeared into history didn't do anything of the sort. But that power that gripped them and filled them made it possible for them not only to continue on, but to continue on with a power greater than anything they had known before. It enabled them to go on and spread their message and change the world. And when we talk about Easter, we're talking about a resurrection power that they experienced, that we experience today. And that's what Easter is about. Christ is risen. Christ is risen indeed.